Hello, my name is Dave Hanrady, and there will be No Encore. Welcome to episode 34 of the No Encore Music Podcast. Packed house this week. Craig's back from his holidays.
Don't look back in hanger. What's up?
That's appropriate.
It's a good one,
isn't it?
It's a good
one.
Because hanger's kind of a word now.
There was no nickname last
Horribly,
week.
Horribly, yeah, I know. I thought Colm might do something, but
nope.
No, let the side down.
Didn't bother.
The streak is over.
This isn't on me.
It is.
It's kind of on you.
Hey, okay, to be fair, yeah, I left my timekeeping duties to one of you to look after when I was on holidays, and that didn't happen.
We
so you
handled
know.
It okay for one episode.
We did fine. Even off the grid, though.
We did fine.
A little bit.
Like Nick Stahl in Terminator 3.
I hear the guards are on strike, though,
after
we record this, so yeah.
Really?
The purge begins.
Does it start as soon as we exit the studio?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Crank Grill is going to be out there.
Keep the mics on.
So that's Craig, that's Colm, and we're joined this week by Jennifer Gannon of State, of 2FM, of Today FM, of News Talk, and various different outlets. Hello.
Hello. Me and my vagina are thrilled to be allowed into your boys' cast.
You're telling that. what a round of applause.
Applause, yeah.
Well, I don't know how to follow that.
My intros aren't that good.
Jen reviewed Lady Gaga, which we didn't review on the podcast because we're scared of women. So, and also because the first single was dreadful. As a fan, Jen, your review read quite crestfallen.
It was. It was the only time I've ever had to give her a really, really bad review of all the times I've reviewed everything she's ever done, from sneezing to shooting fire from her tits. I've loved everything that she's done, and I just think this is just a bid to stop all that and to stop being avant-garde and stop being weird and stop being the weird kid in school and just to nullify herself and make herself bland to fit in with a lot of bland pop stars these days, which is what's happening. It's all just normcore. And it's really depressing to see somebody that is really inventive and has pulled a lot from like the world of even like gay culture, drag culture, to, you know, S&M and everything else in between, and to just see that just bland itself out under the hands of Mark Ronson, really, and Father John fucking Misty and Beck. And I mean, even though I love Beck, but they just don't know what to do with a pop star. They don't know what to do with a female pop star especially, and they've just made her sound really disgracefully countrified and boring. And that's the worst thing it can be as a pop star, is boring.
And do you think this is like a proper, okay, here's my next artistic move, I want to do something different? Or do you think it's kind of like a panic situation where she's reeling, okay, like it's the diminishing returns in terms of sales, maybe?
I suppose, yeah,
it's the same for
I
everyone.
Do. I think she's afraid because art pop just, I mean, there was a lot of things that people were saying it was called art flop, and that's, you know,
right,
that
yeah.
was the way it was going around. But the criticism against it. But the thing about art pop was it was their most condensed and the most fun album that she's ever done, and the most cohesive album that she's ever done. And I think she got scared because then when things started taking off, people started going, well, she's kind of, you know, really in a ghetto on her own.
Right,
because
yeah.
everybody else is embracing the more mainstream side of things, and she wasn't, and she was going further down the rabbit hole of crazy, and, you know, incorporating stuff like wandering around in the Nip and, you know, doing concept stuff with Marina Abramovich, and, you know, just getting Jeff Koons to design the front cover. And a lot of people are just afraid of that. And, you know, it may garner great Guardian think pieces, but it didn't translate for her fans.
Yeah, was it lacking the big kind of hits, I suppose, as well?
It
I mean,
was
if
just
she had
bonkers.
Had a smash, yeah.
Like, there was a great moment where she appeared on X Factor and everybody was terrified. She rolled around, her seashell bikini fell off when she was doing Venus, and then she scrambled onto the piano, like, dressed like she was, you know, half mummified. And Dermot O'Leary had to hug her at the end and looked really scared to even touch her. And that's what you want from a pop star. You don't want
to terrify Dermot O'Leary. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I absolutely
agree. Physicist of that whole sexualized tits and ass pop stars, like Pussycat Dolls, like anything now or seen with Fifth Harmony. I mean, they have great songs, but you couldn't tell one from the other. I mean, she was the complete opposite of that. But now it's like, because she went so far, she's now gone, I'm going to track back and get those sales again, because she was such a big seller. She was a massive seller.
Yeah.
And now I think that's the bid to do that, is to become normal and to, you know, make herself feel like even an elder stateswoman of pop now. And the way to do that is get a load of boys that don't really are scared of pop stars, or just have never listened to chart pop music or European pop, where she came from, real kind of Pet Shop Boys is clever pop music.
Sure.
And just make her completely normal, which is really sad.
I mean, there's one argument, though, that you'd say that, like, getting in the likes of Kevin Parker, Beck, Father John Misty and stuff like that, that is the sort of avant-garde move down that rabbit hole in a way, isn't it?
No, I mean, it's just, it's not. It should be, she should be.
But like you say, that's not something that any other pop star
it's
is
a left
doing.
Turn. It's
but
kind
they
of,
are,
yeah.
they are kind of slowly doing that, because if you look at Rihanna, she was working with Kevin Parker as well. So, I mean, she was working with it's getting to the stage where you're trying to make a bid for credibility, which is not what you should do with pop music. You shouldn't have to do that. It should be out there. It shouldn't be what all the boys are listening to. It should always be a niche thing. Like, pop music is the home for, you know, traditionally women and for gay men. And it's there, it's that, it's always the expressive side of stuff that's still underground. And I think it's a horrible thing that you're seeing a pop star that was so creative and was so out there wanting to get on mainstream American radio, which is really depressing. It shouldn't be like that. She should have gone balls to the wall and made art pop too, and even more crazy and even more niche. But, you know, I think it's at the stage now where she's thinking money-wise. She wants to just cash in.
Well, I look forward to not checking out the albums.
It sounds like it's been
pretty poor. One male pop star, though, who has been kind of in the news lately is Justin Bieber. We'll be talking about him. Didn't get to see his concert this week in the 3 Arena. One of two.
I'm surprised
that I wasn't there.
Yeah. I mean, you're constantly talking about the Biebs at this point. You're just holding up there as, actually, this guy is pretty credible,
It wasn't for lack of trying, although I heard it wasn't great, but we'll get to
I'm
that.
Not surprised.
I did go to two gigs, though, over the weekend. I went to Glass Animals in the Olympia, who I'd never heard of beforehand. And Cullen was like, they're fucking great.
Yeah, I thought their album earlier this was fantastic.
I don't know why, based on what I saw.
Oh, really? Not a good night?
Really? Yeah. No, I had a terrific bank holiday Halloween weekend. Just put that out there. But that was not a great gig. They seem to have, they're like a funk version of Foles. And if that makes sense. And
sounds appalling.
It's not great.
Yeah.
The Olympia was the loudest I've ever heard it in my life. I was in the balcony for the first time ever, and I wasn't pleased because I felt a bit, not vertigo, but I was like, is this really, I don't know. Like, I mean, you couldn't see anything. And
yeah, it's an odd place to be, actually.
You were
yeah.
scared, Dave. Come on.
I was a little bit scared.
You figure it's going to be the best spot in the house, and it's really not.
Yeah, I was like, oh, the balcony? Yeah. Yes. And then I was like,
it is quite steep.
It's quite steep, and I'm leaning over, and I'm like, I'm going to fall, and I'm going to be like, it remembered horrifically. Across the way, there was some terrible, terrible dancing going on by Roz Purcell. So, you know, getting her moves on.
To Glass Animals.
Probably have to bleep that out. But yeah, I don't know. I don't get it. It was like when we saw the Maccabees there, like, they were all right, but the crowd was the loudest thing I've ever heard. This was the loudest thing I've ever heard since there. I've seen Mogwai. I've seen My Bloody Valentine live, and this, the crowd alone were screaming. So everyone enjoyed themselves. Their audience appeared to be made of people who look like they are auditioning for Two Tube and, you know, or something. So
asymmetrical haircuts and
lots of that. Yeah. Lots of that. I felt very old. But yeah, we were only there for an hour because we left to go to a party, which was great. The cab driver on the way to the party.
What a fabulous life you
think. The cab driver on the way to the party wore one.
Cabs and everything. walking for Dave.
The decadence. The cab driver wore one fingerless glove, and I was terrified because I was like, well, that's it. That's the end.
Yeah.
He's going to slit my fucking throat.
Or break into song.
Turned out he was a lovely man. Yeah. A lovely man who ran 6 marathons. So if you're listening, I apologize for getting the wrong impression of you. And yeah, nice guy.
Following night, we're back in the Olympia for La Galaxy. Dave left coated in more glitter than I've ever seen a straight man wear in my life.
Cullen wouldn't hug me.
No, I was going to get destroyed if I had.
It's the practicalities.
I left for a cigarette. I came back and Dave had somehow convinced someone else in the crowd to cover him in glitter.
He threw glitter on me.
You asked.
Never be ashamed to be covered in glitter, guys.
Yeah, it was great.
It's a beautiful, wonderful experience.
Until the next day.
Yeah,
how long did it take to get out?
There's glitter on my stairs, there's glitter in my shower, there's glitter in my bed, and
this is your first single, is it?
No, these are mentioned in the Charlie XCX.
I was about to say these are discarded lyrics from Charlie XCX. X's new song. We'll be talking about that later on as well.
The Galaxy were great.
They were fantastic. Yep. I decided to commemorate the night by turning up with my hair done like McPope's.
Not your beard though, sadly.
No,
is
not
that
my
your
beard,
costume,
sadly.
Yeah.
I couldn't rustle the beard together in like half an hour.
Cullum had a shaving mishap.
Yeah. Got someone else to do the tidy bits down the back that I can't see. And yeah, slip of the razor. Big bald patch at the back, and so I was like,
it's
right, it's got
all
pretty
I'm liking
quick,
it now,
though.
Yeah. It's a good look for you.
It is, I know, yeah.
You have a nice shaped head, you can get away with it.
This is the exact commiseration offered by my girlfriend, so yeah, maybe you're on to something there.
I am.
Okay, I'm going to move on, because I don't need to discuss your follicles any further.
No.
Let's get to the news.
Let's.
Important update.
Very quick update, yeah.
I just want the first paragraph. That's all we need.
Well, Robbie Williams, we talked about his new house not so long ago. He's living next to Jimmy Page.
Yeah. Burying the lead here, I feel.
He bought it after the death. Yeah, that's right, Dave. Death of filmmaker Michael Winner.
Broken to me on the podcast. Well, I was very upset, but I still am.
Well, good news, Dave. He's still around.
Robbie Williams has enlisted a Native American healer to cleanse his new mansion of the spirit of its former owner. the rock star and his wife made the bizarre plan after moving into the house in West London because his wife said she was spooked at the idea of the director watching over her and criticising her interior decor.
It's a bit harsh saying it's a cleansing, isn't it? Poor Michael Winner, like, he's dirty soul on him.
It just gets worse and worse for him at this stage. We were supposed to review the Rob Williams album on this episode, but unfortunately the agency that was supposed to send it out to me didn't. So
you use the word unfortunately.
You'd think they'd want to get that out there.
Dave.
It could be good.
We're going to have a chance to catch it live anyway, but since we were last on, he's confirmed a gig for next June, I think, at the Aviva.
And we have to go, do we? Is this what's happening?
It's mandatory.
Could tell me this off air.
Bow to our Williamsian overlord.
I saw Take That in Croke Park years ago. They were excellent, but we got a Robbie Williams mini concert in the middle because he was back for that tour. So we got half an hour of him on his own, and I didn't need that.
You know? No one does.
No, it was too much.
Why did they bring him back? Seriously, they were
money,
doing so
tickets.
Well. Yeah, I know.
And that album's good. That Progress album's really good.
Principles of Take That are more important.
But the principles of Paul Hewson, aka Bono, are expanding, apparently.
Well, they're getting in places now, yeah.
He's officially an Onion story and a Parks and Rec storyline. Glamour magazine has been criticised for naming UT frontman Bono on their annual Women of the Year list. Now, when this news broke, I announced it to a few people who are around me, as I tend to do with these things, and one guy was like, oh, so he's like, he's getting like a special award. And I was like, no, he's on the Women of the Year list. And he was like, he's on they have one list and he's on it. And he was like, but that doesn't make, I was like, no, I know it doesn't make any sense. So I still can't make sense of this.
It's almost like a publicity stunt.
Sure,
in an ailing newspaper / magazine industry.
They're just negging. I mean, it really is. Even the editor that was talking about it just saying that, you know, somehow because he's supporting the charity, you know, Poverty is Sexist, that elevates him above actual women who are doing thankless charity work. And just by the virtue of him owning a penis, this makes him somehow better than them. And it's just, it's, you know, when they, it's like they're actually hexing themselves, or just it's made this null and void. I mean, all awards are null and void. They are all ridiculous. Obviously. But
excuses,
I mean, if you have other people nominated, I mean, alongside them, like the three women that set up the Black Lives Matter campaign and also the Stanford rape survivor, I think it just makes a mockery of the whole thing.
Now, I mean, it should be said that, you know, we have, in this week in particular, like, elevated Glamour's Women of the Year Awards to something alongside the Nobel Prize in terms of its prestige.
In fairness, Glamour, like, the Women of the Year, it's supposed to shine a light on women that just don't get the credit for the work that they do in these kind of realms. And what is the point in having, you know, Bono gets all the bloody credit. And, like, for Bono to be in this, it sucks all the oxygen out of that conversation about these women who
do this every day. I don't disagree. I mean, to be fair, though, I can remember the same thing happening last year with Caitlyn Jenner, where a lot of people said, like, that this wasn't an award.
That's a whole, you know, different. Do you want to go into that? Do you
I'm
really?
Gonna sit back.
Let's get into Caitlyn Jenner. Well, horrible human being.
But no, what I was going to say is that, like, people said that it was an award that wasn't given on merit, I suppose, basically, and that it kind of took a high-profile story.
That is about trying to shine a light on actual transgender issues. I think that was not, that was why that got so much press anyway, because Caitlyn Jenner as a human, maybe not so much, but around the issues of trans, it was good to, you know, get a spotlight on that in the mainstream media, because I can see where they're coming from with that. But Bono is always bloody getting awards for everything.
He's really good at pretending that he's not worthy, while also patting himself on the back.
Yeah, we should point out, case in point, Bono has said he was sure he didn't deserve it.
But the battle for gender equality couldn't be won unless men lead it along with women. Bono said he was grateful for the honour, and said that men were largely responsible for the problem, so we have to be involved in the solutions. Fair?
Yeah.
I mean that's true.
Craig is not pleased about that.
Oh, I don't know, I am.
You're just like, oh.
No, I don't know. That sounds okay to me.
Are you not all men? Is that what you're doing?
Oh, shit, Craig.
I'm sure. I don't know what else Bono was supposed to say in that instance. Like,
I'm not going to accept this. I shouldn't be here. Nominate blah blah blah.
Well, I don't think he's gone to the ceremony, has he?
He's in all the PR pictures. He's in all the press.
Oh, is he? Okay, I didn't realize.
So he's obviously just taken on board where he should say, "Hey, I work with this great woman. Why don't we, you know, have her instead?" But no, he just said, "Hey, man, let's all get involved too." That's just
the press photo is incredible.
It's horrendous.
They're in a wood, and he's in the middle, and all the other women are bending their knees to be the same.
Around
what? Oh my god! Like, okay, I did not realize this.
Like, it's like he's both Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
It's really dodgy looking, and yeah, as you say, Jen, every single news story is obviously led with this as their headline for obvious reasons because it is click-worthy. And yeah, I mean, as Craig says, publicity stunt probably, but congratulations. He's really this is a real feather in his cap. So, you know. He'll be delighted with
it. Does this mean like he's an honorary woman? Like all those photos of him on like yachts with young girls is grand now because he's just hanging with the girls. He can tell his wife that.
It's what photographs like, are these?
Oh yeah, check the internet.
I think they're his daughters though.
No, I don't think so. I think that was the uproar. But anyway.
We really should move on.
Yes,
while we still have a podcast. Justin Bieber was harassed on Grafton Street before his gig, the night before his first gig, by a quote-unquote fan, who I don't think was a fan at all. Some guy saw him come out of a tanning salon and followed him down the street, filmed him, and kept saying, I'm a big fan, would you please talk to me, would you give me an autograph, whatever, I'm going to your gig tonight. Justin Bieber corrected him and said that my gig isn't tonight, thus exposing the lie. If you listen to this guy's tone of voice, it's supercilious as fuck. I think he knew what he was doing. I think he wanted to go viral. Sure enough, an interview followed in The Independent the next day, in which he claimed to be distraught and was giving away his ticket, and, you know, he's never meet your heroes, all this kind of stuff. And, yeah, I thought it was gross. I thought it was horrible.
It was, yeah.
What do you think?
I thought Bieber handled it well as well. He was just kind of quiet and polite and walked away and kept walking away.
Like, please stop.
Even the security, who aren't known for being polite, were like, seriously, man, just stop filming.
Well, yeah, this is it. And I mean, like, you have to assume that most of Justin Bieber's fans are going to be, you know, teenagers, if not younger. And so their mom is going to be there to say, no, Keith, stop. The nice man said there's no photos. Unfortunately, Keith in this case was about 30.
27.
And so, but yeah, and so both, you know, his mom wasn't there to stop him, and he went home and rather than crying into his pillow, cried down the phone to Spin 103.8. here's the thing. As far as the bigger picture goes and people kind of like, you know, trying to get photos of celebrities and stuff, that's just where we are.
And I just think you can be as rude as you want.
Huh?
I think the ruder the better. I think Louis C.K. has a right to say, no, fuck off, go away. I don't want to be in your photo.
I thought you meant that somebody should be rude too.
No, I think the celebrities should be.
There are celebrities, Dave.
Celebrities should be as rude as they like because I think, I mean, with Ireland, you have this stupid notion that, hey, we ignore celebrities or we don't care about famous people.
That's
we
nonsense.
Are the worst. And we will annoy people until they, you know, will get angry. And I think, you have this level where it is like, let's just pose for a picture, please get in my picture. And I think it's just so, and it is like people like that who are not even fans, they're not even genuine. I mean, yeah, as you said, Justin Bieber fans, they're mostly kids, and kids are fine. And I think, but if there's anybody over the age of, you know, that are old enough to know better and that's harassment, they should definitely be told to piss off.
You see, I mean, like, I do have reservations about the idea that, like, you know, yeah, like, photos are kind of out of bounds and shouldn't be done. When Bieber charges through the nose for meet and greets and stuff like that, he has very much commodified the idea of getting a picture with Justin Bieber.
But yeah, but that you're buying a product that's like at a specific place and time and that's agreed to. It's, you know, it's...
See, also the reason why it's because of tabloid culture, because people sell these pictures or, you know, nightclub pictures or pictures where you may have, you know, a banned substance hanging out of his nose and stuff like that. So you can understand
sure,
it. They're like, please
do
not take my picture. I want to control this. I'm going to charge you the money.
Oh, sure. I can see why they refuse. But like, I mean, I don't see why you would expect people to, you know, out of the goodness of their hearts, not ask in that case.
Yeah, asking is one thing. But
this guy was...
And it's the difference between a picture and video, which it's a weird thing with smartphones now where everyone's constantly videoing everything.
It's a knee-jerk reaction.
And they give, but it feels, I think people think it gives them this weird license where they're at some like weird remove because they're behind a camera and they're like, I'm capturing all of this so
like
I don't have to be a normal polite human being. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very strange thing. It's like kind of road rage where you're behind this glass window and you're not actually interacting with the person as a human being. Like, I don't know.
And
I felt
bad for them. In your article, like, I mean, they don't owe you anything.
Yeah,
you know?
This is the thing. I wrote an article for Headstuff called Leave Justin Bieber the Fuck Alone because it seems to be like an increasing thing. And as you say, it was that thing where, catchy title.
Tears rolling down his face as he hammered at his laptop
clearly
long
reference,
into the night.
Clearly,
it was a good article.
Clearly
I liked
reference,
it.
But,
I liked it.
No, I felt compelled to write it because I just thought this is bullshit. And some people are like, oh, you know, well, that's what you signed up for. And I don't agree with that at all.
I must say now, and like I've written in the past on this from kind of like legal standpoints as well. And like what would actually stand up in a court of law in terms of, you know, what you can reasonably expect people to be paying attention to. And like, you know, you say that is what you signed up for. Well, at some levels, it kind of is. with some celebrities and what they're doing in different things. So, for instance, I mean, one that I remember well was Lily Allen fighting with the paparazzi for following her when she was just kind of pottering about her daily business. I don't really know what she was doing. I don't know what Lily Allen does on a daily basis, apart from get abused for, by taxi drivers, it seems. But it was like, you can't do like open a clothes shop, make a reality TV show about a clothes shop, invite Vogue in for an exclusive video going through your wardrobe, and then be surprised that someone wants to see what you're wearing.
It's not
on
the same.
A Tuesday
but you
afternoon.
But you don't know that that's not been the millionth time she's been harassed, or you don't know what those photographers are saying to her. You don't know what the situation was.
Oh, listen, absolutely not. No,
but
no,
like,
no, no,
it
no.
is part of her job to, you know, as you can have your arm in whatever business you want to, but like where the business ends, and I do understand what you're saying, but that's promotional business. That's not her just going around Sainsbury's or whatever, or picking her kids up from school. Like, there has to be some kind of boundaries. And I think, you know, paparazzi, they're just a law unto themselves, but normal people should have a little bit more cop on and a bit more respect for people.
There's a weird thing going on with Justin Bieber and his fans in general at the moment.
He kind of hates them.
He's just
tired.
Them.
And
yeah,
they're,
he's wrecked.
They're weirdly tired. On Twitter, like, to him, it's just like, just shut up and sing your songs. But yeah, there's this weird
passive.
He's 22
like, as
I know.
Well. And he's been doing this since he was 13.
He's like the depressed polar bear in Dublin Zoo. And he's just
yeah,
walking
I'm kind
back
of
and
loving
forth
how exasperated. Like, do you see him at that Manchester gig where he was just like trying to do some ballads and he had to go, "Will everyone just shut up? You can scream at the end of it, but listen, I just need some quiet right now, all right?"
He needs a break.
He needs a break before he burns out. And like that GQ interview, he was like Stephen Dorff's character in somewhere, that Sofia Coppola film. He just feels it's really empty. It's a really bizarre kind of almost Bret Easton Ellis character existence.
Yeah, that's just.
I do feel sorry for him as well after that new album, which I think everyone sort of agrees
really
with. Yeah, but everyone agrees that it's sort of a reinvention. But he's now realised that while he can reinvent himself, he can't reinvent the situation in which he's landed in, i.e. having these fans who have been there for quite a while, having new fans join every day. And basically the old Bieber, as it were, is still kind of following him around to
a
certain extent.
It's the tyranny of the hatred of teenage girls. They make you successful, but then you don't want them anymore. If you look at Blur, that's the same thing that Alex James used to always opine about in the Britpop days. And take that, you know, but take that are savvy now because they're like a bunch of dads and they're hot dads. And they understand that their, you know, audience will grow with them. So that's what Bieber, but what Bieber wants is instantaneous. He wants Kanye's audience now.
But what he really
wants, he has to earn it. So,
what,
you know,
what he needs is a child
maybe.
Or a cheese farm, is what you're saying.
Precisely, yeah. I was about to say, Alex James is really going to be bitten the ass when he gets in reverse now, and when Blur touring again is just loads of farmers just out there.
Tory farmers.
Oi, get back there and make some Chilton, mate.
It's
but,
tough.
You know,
one,
he needs to wait. He needs to wait it out. Take a break. And, you know, the teenage girls that, you know, you can drive all your cars and live in your several mansions with all your top models with, you know, they gave you all that, but they will, you know, they might not be there afterwards, but who will be there?
And with the greatest of respect to local businesses as well, don't just visit random tattooing salons on Grafton Street. Like, am I right?
Are you
this
right?
is strange behaviour for a multimillionaire global superstar.
I once saw Victoria Beckham in Miss Selfridge, so come on. Like,
she was probably looking to buy it.
They're just like us, and that's why you should leave them the fuck alone.
Exactly.
So, you know, like honestly, like Craig, you often get harassed on the streets.
Yeah,
so,
but
you know,
as I'm coming out of tanning salons.
Like, give it up.
How do I look, by the way?
Dago.
Bronze.
You look excellent. I think that's a good point about the Kanye audience thing, because with that last album, while I quite liked it, it did represent a very obvious, like, okay, he's been listening to The Weeknd. He's listening to Kanye West. He's working with these people. Mm. And yeah, as you say, he wants it now. It's tough. I mean, like, if he wants to be an artist of purpose, it could come. It might happen. But I do think that, yeah, he needs to take some time off, but he might not be allowed.
Well, and the other thing is, what audience will still be there?
He's grown up.
He's a fucking brand.
He's like, a human being, Dave.
There's contracts. There's
but
contracts.
That's the thing, because they're so afraid that if he goes away for even 2 seconds, everybody will just forget about him and move on. And that's
true.
The thing.
Yeah. Possibly. But yeah, we shall move on. And one band moving on is Fight Like Apes. They've called it a day. Friends of the show. And they released a statement on Facebook that was quite pertinent. It spoke to the struggles of a lot of artists. And, I mean, I'm not going to read out the whole thing. But they acknowledge that they've been quiet for a while and that they have been struggling, that they have day jobs, and that it's getting even harder for an Irish band to make it. Make a kind of stressed, you know, if you're at a gig, buy a t-shirt, buy some merch, go and pay for music. If you have a Deezer or a Spotify subscription for $10 a month, it doesn't put money in the band's
or
pockets.
A free Apple Music one that you haven't cancelled yet.
How's that going?
I think it's number two. But yeah.
Oh, excellent.
I'll get around to it.
Good. Yeah, so essentially it's a story that we've seen before, and it's a story that many are speculating that we're going to see more of, bands folding kind of left, right and centre, and essentially the marketplace becoming oversaturated. Even by marketplace, I mean the access that we have to music. It's a shame. I think they had 10 very good years. They're looking back on it in bittersweet positive fashion. Mm. Their final gigs are selling out like crazy.
As they should. Terrific they live band.
Yeah, excellent live band.
Great people.
If you never caught them live, you missed out, and it's your fault. But
good crew. They're always
them well.
Yeah, they've always been on my list alongside Wallace Bird and a few of the others. I've mentioned this before on my people who always get props for coming on a college radio show.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Sign of a good person that takes time to do that. And
can we have a bad person who didn't do it?
Pardon me.
Can we name a few bad people who didn't?
You know what? I must say, actually,
we can bleep it out.
Yeah.
oh, fuck him.
The late Sir Richard Attenborough.
The late Michael Winner.
Yeah. He was there though, in spirit.
Yeah. But Fight Like Apes came in and played in studio, actually.
Wow.
Stinking a buck fast, 11 a.m.
That's what you want.
Crack.
It's kind of pop rock stars you
crack.
Want.
It is indeed. Yeah. Let's move on to some of the songs of the week.
We shall. Are we going to go random order here, or...
Let's go random, I think. Let's.
Okay, Jen, as our guest, you can pick the first number.
Well, I have to pick Charlie XCX.
Okay, it's not a number, but we'll go with it.
I'm sorry.
Number
it's
one.
It's the number Charlie XCX. the best number.
Okay, this is Charlie XCX. We're gonna keep it going. We're gonna rip it up. The neighbors might complain. Cause after the after party, we're gonna stay till morning. Then so, Charlie XCX featuring Lil Yachty. Lil Yachty has been on the show before.
He has indeed.
Of course.
As a guest.
As a guest, sadly. As the architect of a song with Kylie Jenner on it, which was difficult to listen to.
Jordan. Never been on a song before, Jordan.
Yeah, it was awful. So, we have a Charlie XCX fan on one side of the table, and I think a dissenter on the other. Where should we start, Craig?
I was a fan.
Well, I was referring to Jen as the fan.
Oh, sorry.
Why?
If you want to jump in there.
Craig, sorry. Let's start with a fan.
Go ahead.
I
love her. Of course I'm going to love her. I love her. I think, you know, even she can't stop herself from writing these songs with about 3 or 4 hooks in them. I mean, she even had a song on the Angry Birds soundtrack called Explode, which is one of the songs of the year, which was kind of ignored completely because it was on the Angry Birds soundtrack. And she just is this perfect mix of Shampoo, Bow Wow Wow, The Flying Lizards. And I think, you know, for someone who is so prolific, she hasn't really reached the dizzy heights that she possibly should have, and this is a very commercialized. I think she does well when she's collaborating with people like Icona Pop, etc., Rita Ora. But she does well on that side of things, and she's a really good songwriter for other people. But I think on her own, I don't know why this hasn't connected more with people, and maybe this might push her through because it's just one of these, total party songs, which is fine. It's not the most interesting or challenging thing she's ever done, and I think, you know, album wise Sucker was nigh on flawless, and there were songs in there that, you know, One Direction should have taken on board, and she wrote a couple of them for them and they were rejected, and I can't understand why either. But I'm just thinking her next move, she did like a kind of a weird EP
wasn't really into that.
I like that she's branching off and doing odd
different things.
You know, I think whatever she'll settle on, she'll try and make it work, and I think this is, you know, pretty much flawless pop.
Oh, it's me now, Davis.
Yeah, it's your turn.
I'm kind of on the fence on this one. I was kind of a fan of a lot of her earlier work. I can't believe I just said that.
But it has been
interesting to me how she hasn't broken through on her own as a bona fide star. And with a song like this, yeah, it has all the hooks in the right places. It's kind of oddly sedate for the subject matter, I think. But it works that way. It's quite pleasant. I like it. But I just feel like this won't be a big hit either. There's something preventing her from breaking through, and I'm not sure what it is.
But it doesn't
feel like this song is the one to do.
I thought Sucker was great, and I was surprised that it didn't lead to a bigger kind of platform for her. When I first heard this, I hated it. I thought it was absolute rubbish. I thought it was really annoying. It irritated the fuck out of me. And I kind of just threw it to one side immediately in this, you know, Spotify wasteland that we live in now. I was like, I'm done with that. And then when it became apparent that we were going to do it for the show, I was like, okay, let's go back in. And I can't get it out of my head, and I really like it. I think that there actually is... I mean, like, she's not subtle. That's kind of her thing. there's not a lot of substance here, but that's fine. But
it's knowingly like that, though.
I think
isn't
so.
It?
Yeah,
it's done
yeah.
with a wink,
and she's very good at that. And I do find the kind of the melody in it, which is almost designed to piss you off, and definitely designed to kind of bounce into your head, and you can't get rid of it. It won me over. It absolutely won me over. It's a grower. I really like it. It's not going to be my songs of the year list or anything, but I'm on board. One man who is not on board is Colm O'Regan.
In the strange labyrinth and maze of pop culture in my head, I sometimes lie awake at night and wonder, whatever happened to Rebecca Black? And I think we got our answer. This is Friday part three after the after party. That's what this is. It is dire. I mean, you said the hooks are where they're meant to be. And yeah, as though they were laid out by a computer program.
But that's how good she is. See, she makes it perfect.
Computers are the future, Colm.
Yeah, but like, did
it's was like Westworld?
But was Friday perfect?
Kind of was. I mean, in a way, in a bizarre way, yeah. Friday
I mean,
was
like,
kind of perfect.
I'll say there is some sort of merit to constructing a song like that. But in terms of anything interesting, in terms of anything absorbing, I got nothing from this. It was funny. I read a quote from Charlie XCX pretty much the day before this song was released, where she'd said that she might release her new album if she gets bored. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, for me that would just be sharing the burden. We'd both be bored in that case.
Jesus.
This does nothing for me.
I will say Little Yachty just shouldn't be there.
He
really
shouldn't. I'd like a mix without him.
It's just tacked on.
I don't get him.
I'm starting to not get these weird just rap features for no apparent
reason.
It's just we have to include this 20
and
seconds
Rebecca
of nothing.
Black, lads. Seriously.
We said before that the featured artist is kind of becoming devalued sometimes. I mean, it still has the ability to be amazing, but it's almost suspicious. It's almost like, well, I know why that's there. I always come back to like Jessie J featuring Ariana Grande, featuring Nicki Minaj on Bang Bang, her desperate song to break America. And, you know, Jesus, read the interview that Jessie J did with the Daily Mail around that time. It's fucking hilarious.
I always come back to
they don't appreciate me in Britain.
I always
they
come
do
back
in
to
America.
A
no, they
wonderful
don't.
And not in Australia either. So
you're running out of continents.
There's a wonderful conversation with Tony Fenton, the late, great Tony Fenton,
You've got a Tony Fenton impression, don't you?
What's that?
Do you have an impression of Tony Fenton?
Not much. I think everyone does at some level.
You do?
But yeah, it was Tony Fenton was asked who his favourite like artist at the time was, especially someone new, someone that people mightn't pay attention to a lot, and he said, featuring. And so, sorry? As in, like, you know, maybe there's some new underground band, and he's like, yeah, all those songs, you know, featuring this, featuring that, all crackers. Yes.
Okay, well, look, we'll move on. There are four songs left. Pick a number, Craig.
Number three, please, Dave.
All right. This is going to be a good one because you had some difficulty getting into Skepta's album earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
This is Section Boys with Skepta. It's called Hashtag Worst.
My G's are the worst. Fuck what you heard. My G's are the worst. Diss me, that's a curse. Late night on a purge. Four man in a murk. Door slamming and burst. Fuck what you heard. My G's are the worst. Fuck what you heard. My G's are the worst. Diss me, that's a curse. Late night on a purge. Four man in a murk. Door slamming and burst.
Fuck what you heard. I've been up in a bitch. Chat boy can't go broke. They hollering.
Okay, so Konnichiwa, Mercury Prize nomination. Oh no, hang on, won, didn't he?
Won,
yeah,
won,
yeah, sorry, I yeah. never fucking remember who wins
winner.
Those things. Winner, Mercury Prize winner, I apologise, Skepta.
He's gonna kill you.
I'm dead, it's over. Grime, how are you feeling about Grime now, Craig?
Yeah, I'm still not getting into it, to be honest. This was
just
doing nothing for me.
Is there a white man from
Dublin? Might be.
I don't think this is the greatest advertisement for it, to be honest.
It's not.
This is plodding.
I mean, hashtag worst. You're onto a loser already, aren't you?
It's like Jack Reacher never go back, you know, the reviews itself. I saw it, by the way. Yeah.
You saw that bit where he smashes his fist through the window.
To punch another guy out.
It's amazing. Just like McBain wanted.
But there's one, they do actually get around it. Because I saw you tweet it out. What you don't see in that trailer is he has a salt shaker nestled in his fist. It's still ridiculous.
It's amazingly ridiculous, and I'd actually just go see the film just for that bit.
Yeah, it's not great. And I like Tom Cruise, and I like Jack Reacher, but the first one, not the books, because they're terrible. But yeah, it wasn't great. But anyway, back
so
to
my issues with grime as a genre. I definitely don't think this is a good advertisement. No, there was a lot of stuff on Konnichiwa that kind of worked for me, but I just, as a whole record, it was kind of very grating. And do you ever mess around with like Logic or something like that, and just kind of the synths and
that
bits and bobs like
though.
That?
When do you do this?
I do this occasionally.
I've never heard this. I've known for 5 years.
every kind of, especially the hooks on this, or not the hooks, but the synths on this, the bass synths, are like the worst presets on Logic that you always skip because they're obnoxious.
So it's like a ting ting.
Yeah, and I just can't get past it.
Remember Ting Ting's had a song called Great DJ, which was a loop. They had a loop that, like if you're testing out Apple's new GarageBand thing, it's just like press this button, and that's what they used.
Yeah. It sounded like that to me. So.
Yeah,
no, there was no way.
It's not a good tune. To be perfectly honest, I think that if Skepta's name wasn't involved here, you could probably just write it off completely without even.
Yeah, and he's trying to make them be a thing, as has Drake, apparently. So yeah, we can't wait for that new Drake LP in like about a year that's going to sound entirely like Grime, because that's what he does. Yeah, not great.
Funny, coming back to something that we mentioned earlier in the show, the song and the video mentions The Purge. And it appears as though they've celebrated The Purge by sitting on a bus.
Good, clean fun. No one got hurt.
Good London lads.
Jen, what do you think of this?
It's fine. I mean, I don't really... The only konnichiwa in my life is Robin's konnichiwa, the superior one. But obviously. But it's fine. It's not, you know, I don't really think it's for me, but it's not against me either. So yeah, I'm fine with it.
It's fine.
It's nothing. It's not too heavy, like it's not, but even the video, I think they could have just taken it further if they wanted. It kind of just looks like a bad Ill Manners version of Ill Manners, which you don't want to be doing if you're supposed to be cutting edge crimes dudes. I don't think that's what you want to be.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, it's plotting. It's the weakest song in the bunch, I think, perhaps.
And that's a good point. I mean, there's nothing cutting edge about this. It sounds quite dated, which is weird.
It does sound very dated, yeah. So we'll move on. Craig, a number.
Oh, okay, number two. Let's get up to date.
Right, let's do this. Let's get up to date with Papa Roach. Crooked Teeth by Papa Roach. That's the Papa Roach song in 2016. And yeah, I didn't quite believe Colin when he said that was a thing. But
listen,
it is.
You know what? I've done my research here.
All right.
Papa Roach released an album last year, released an album 3 years before that, 2 years before that, 1 year before that, and 3 years before that again. Papa Roach have had 5 albums in the past decade.
And it's
this
still
is, this is from
Jacoby
a forthcoming Shattuck,
they're still knocking it out. They're still that level.
Still the same.
It's music that should be much better by people who should know much better, for fans who deserve exactly what they get if they're still listening to Papa Roach in 2016.
Should they know much better?
Exactly. They're still masturbating in their mom's basement, so I mean...
Dave, did you own their debut record when it came out?
Yes, I did, in a steel case. I bought their first two albums. Regular listeners will know that I tend to get shamed for my teenage CD collection, and rightly so in many cases. And Papa Roach, yeah, I bought in Fest. I bought Love, Hate, Tragedy, which was the better record, and has an amazing cover of Pixies' Gouge Away on it.
Okay.
But they didn't write that song.
No, Pixies did.
Pixies did. So, yeah, this is a Papa Roach song, and it's not great. Every now and then, they will unleash a hilariously bad gem, which is so bad it's good, like Be Free, which starts off with the lyrics, woke up and I felt like shit. I had the bottle when I got off stage. All this kind of stuff, like a Pink song.
I love that you remember this.
Oh, I can't, I actually fucked with the lyrics.
Tattooed on your soul.
It's not. On my soul, perhaps. Yeah.
However, before we write Papa Roach off completely, they are crowdfunding this album or pledge musicing it,
really?
Whatever you want to use. Okay. Yep. And one of the offers is $1,000 for a game of bubble soccer with Papa Roach and then a barbecue afterwards.
They're adorable.
Yeah, so basically, Alan, if all those internet dollars start rolling in from Head Stuff Advertising, that is what we want as our present. Thank you.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome. I don't know what else I can say about Papa Roach. It's a Papa Roach song.
I mean, I if they were coming back, you could at least say they're no shitter than when they left. Would be like, they've really done their back catalog into service. So they just seem to be trundling along.
They're probably like, Alien Ant Farm played in like the Voodoo Lounge a couple of weeks ago.
Stop.
Were you there?
No, I just saying, oh lads, stop.
All right,
this is all disgraceful.
Saw one of them got charged with assault for a gig in the UK.
Alien Ant Farm?
Yeah. So.
Well, hang on, he was charged because he put on a gig that was deemed assault?
No. I think he assaulted somebody during or after.
Is he a smooth criminal or?
Boom, boom.
Oh.
Let's move on.
We didn't work on that beforehand, listeners.
Well, we were going to do a Taylor Hawkins song instead, but we didn't. We did the Papa Roach one, which covers our terrible rock quota of the week. So we'll move on. We've got two songs left, and we'll go with a similarly charged song and a much better one. This is Japan Droids with Near to the Wild Heart of Life. Japan Droids, Craig Fitzpatrick.
Big fan, yeah. Celebration Rock is one of my favourite records, I think. The more and more I listen to it and think about it. It's been 4 years, and they come back sounding exactly like you'd expect. Like, this is the most Japan Droids song I've maybe ever heard. It's weirdly kind of folky in the melody. It could be like some old school, like, Woody Guthrie number.
I think it definitely has the sort of, like, Springsteen style, you know, American road song or something like that.
Well, it does have that thing, all right,
I thought it was, like, a good Gaslight Anthem song.
Oh, my God.
Exactly what I've got written down here. Yeah.
Except for, like, they're dreadful.
So,
that's worrying, right?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I said. Even though that sounds like a diss, it's really not. It's kind of like Gaslight Anthem at their very best. This is what Gaslight Anthem wanted to sound like.
Did I ever tell you about the time I interviewed Brian Fallon of Gaslight Anthem? He had a new project. It was with his drum tech. It was called The Horrible Crows. And it was a phoner. So one of my questions written down was, you know, question four was going to be like, you know, a lot of bands, or a lot of people, when they do a big departure, like, you know, like they look to be something totally different with the side project, but not you. It was like, you know, this is like very similar to Gaslight Anthem. And literally before I got to the question, he was like, and of course, you know, this new project is a real departure. And I'm just like, scratch that out and ask that question. And I was like, this album's a little bit, you know, are you ready to be called misogynistic? I feel like it might happen. And he was like, he goes, well, you know, it's called Elsie, and there's a character called Elsie, and we're blaming her for everything. I was like, yeah, that's kind of why I asked the question. And then he was like, well, you know, talk to my wife. We can talk to his wife now, but she's not his wife anymore. So I feel like I was prescient there. I warned him. Jesus. I fucking warned him.
But side projects shouldn't be different, I don't think.
Do you think so?
Like, I love the way Deer Hunter and Atlas Sound are almost interchangeable, and I think that's fine because it's the same person in the same band.
I guess.
You know?
I didn't fare really when it's not just a carbon copy, though. I think in the Gaslight Anthem, the Horrible Crows thing almost end like the same band.
And
like,
that's
like
completely. Two terrible names for bands. They should push band from like making bands with those names.
But just in terms of names,
Droids a good name?
No.
I always keep thinking there should be more ands in it. Like, it's Japan Anandran Droids. Like Dananananakroid.
If we're going to talk about good names, though, their drummer, and I didn't know this until this week, their drummer is named David Prowse.
Darth Vader?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, okay. Yeah, he was the guy who was the body but not voice of Darth Vader.
The lead singer should call himself James Earl Jones, obviously, like, counted this balance out.
Anyway, with this track, I'm hoping...
Yeah, I like this track, by the way.
Yeah, I like it too, but I'm hoping the record doesn't seem like more of the same. Because Celebration Rock was such a great encapsulation of that kind of, you know, that feeling, and everything is just like, all right, yeah, and big yes. But they're kind of just, you know, pulling those moves again on this one. And while I like it, I don't know if I need another album of all that.
Sure. Well, that is the title track of the record. It's out January 27th. So, I guess we look forward to that.
Good. I'm glad it's out next fucking year, because there's been so many albums this year and I want to start compiling my lists. I'm selfish.
Final song that we're going to give a spin to tonight is a new one from Saint Sister. They've got a couple of dates left in their nationwide tour by the time this podcast lands. This new one is called Tin Man. Somewhere in the dark, the skeletons retreat. Christchurch Cathedral this weekend here in Dublin. Saint Sister, that's a new one, Tin Man. Dave, I know you saw them live.
I did.
And you liked what you saw.
I was very blown away. I thought they were great. I saw them Hard Working Class Heroes a year ago. And I saw a couple of bands that night that really kind of took my breath away. They were one of them. Atmosfolk Duo, as they kind of... I'm not sure if they call themselves
I think it is them, yeah.
Okay.
There was a misprint in like Hot Press at one point.
And often it
said, it said Atomsfolk, which I thought was way cooler.
Hey, that's great.
And I was like, I have to check out Atomsfolk, but no, it was just Atomsfolk.
Or some space restaurant called Atmosphere.
They have a very beguiling sound. I'm sure it's another word that seems to follow them around. Mm. And very good when you catch them live in an intimate setting like there or at Body and Soul this year, actually, where in the lashings of rain, people still turned out for them. They kind of keep it simple, and I think that's part of their charm. I quite like them. I quite like this. It doesn't really go anywhere because it doesn't need to. Their songs are all about atmosphere, and they kind of balance it out so well. They complement each other very, very well vocally as well, and their songs are kind of like nice little short stories, and this is definitely one of their better ones.
Yeah, I agree. You know, there's a sense of restraint here. You feel as though it could slip into that Regina Spektor quirk fest rabbit hole, and it never does.
Yeah, it's almost like the stuff they leave out. It's kind of quite sparse. And again, it's just when the vocals dip in and out and that kind of interplay that really sells the whole thing.
Kind of stops suddenly and you're like, yeah, cool, grand.
Yeah, you enjoy the ride, kind of, yeah.
I think they need somebody like a music supervisor just to nab them for some American show or some Netflix show, because it sounds like one of those songs that would be on like one of those kind of dramas. You know, those prestige dramas about a woman in crisis in her 40s. And I think, you know, that's not a bad thing. They remind me a little bit of First Aid Kit.
Very much so.
And that's fine. I mean, it's a nice little song, I guess. I don't know how long that's going to last, or, you know, you want to branch out a bit or do something a little bit different and, you know, to mark your territory in case you get lost.
Yeah, I feel as though there was a little bit more longevity than that, though, because First Aid Kit, even though I like them, they trade on that sort of twee sound.
Mm. Yep.
And yeah, that definitely has shelf life.
Yeah.
Whereas this, yeah, it's a bit more interesting. And we're still waiting for a first album from Saint Sister. That is due sometime next year, as far as I understand.
First Aid Kit in the Workman's years ago, and I think they brought their support act out to help them with a song, and they announced that the support act just got engaged to her boyfriend, and the crowd booed.
Yeah, good. Boo.
That they
boo
just
love.
Bought some gorgeous Swedish one that all the lads were pissed off about or something, is it?
I don't know what why it happened, but it was very strange. It was just like, they were like, this is a nice moment. People were just like, boo. I was like, what the fuck?
Wow. Love is horrendous. Burn them.
It's the land of a thousand welcomes. Okay, let's move on. We're not going to do an album review this week because we didn't have Robert Williams and we were too behind on everything
something
else.
More important came up,
and
Dave.
Something more important came along. Something more important came along in England in the early 90s. Yeah. Am I right?
To banished between us, we thought at the time.
To get rid of Sting and Phil Collins, apparently, was part of this band's mission statement.
Decapitate them, in fact.
Yeah, look, we'll get to it. Oasis, rumours, fresh rumours of a rumour that won't fuck off and a band that also might not fuck off. Oasis might be back in the future. One of the reasons why is because they have a new documentary. It's called Supersonic. It's 2 hours and 5 minutes long. And it kind of doesn't even go into the entire story, but it goes into a pivotal moment from the story, their rise and their kind of culminating in their two shows at Nebworth, was it?
Yeah,
two.
Cut it on seven, Dave.
Cut it on
could
seven.
Still be playing there.
The director is Matt Whitecross. I guess we'll have a listen to some Oasis to lead this in, traditionally. I need to be myself.
Yeah, there's probably not need for too much here. We kind of know what Oasis sound like. And I guess that's sort of the point of this whole documentary, isn't it? It's the rise to ubiquity. And it's pretty unique place in British music in the past 20 years.
And as Dave says, I mean, it doesn't touch on the whole story. But I think maybe you can allow that with Oasis because the Britpop thing with Blur has been done so much to death.
Yeah.
And we've, like, for since they've broken up, but even 5 years prior, 10 years prior, there was such a kind of tabloid feature, a feature of NME, constantly arguing in the press. We know the entire story. So I think it makes sense to just kind of bookend it with, the unlikely lads kind of, and the rise to, at the time, the biggest gigs in British history.
I know you're emailing me this week saying, oh, you know, you have to spend 2 hours with the Gallagher brothers. I actually want to spend 2 hours with the Gallagher brothers. I want to spend 2 hours in the pub with the two of them, with Liam doing his weird cosmic bullshit, but also Crosswick, he will punch you in the face.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, you know, you forget. You do forget. And there's a lot of misty-eyed romanticism in this. It's kind of like the Shane Meadows, Stone Roses one, where it is just a hagiography. And that's what you get when both of them are the brothers. writers are executive producers. You're not going to get, the only thing you get is that Tony McCarroll was severely bullied, and he should have been because he couldn't fucking play the drums. I mean, I remember the evening session, Joe Wiley and Steve Lamacq, they had the Chemical Brothers on at the height of, like, just before Definitely Maybe came out, and they did this thing where they were going to remix the end of the show, and they couldn't mix Live Forever into anything because it was off. And that just proved how bad a drummer he was. So fair enough, he deserved it.
They could have just sacked him, though. They didn't have to bully him horrendously
for
months.
The thing about Oasis that you forget, and it is refreshing, because you're coming off the back of, in the music press at the time, it was so boring. It was, you know, shoegazy. It was people so bloody polite, and they didn't want to offend anyone. And the only people that you had that really outspoken were the Manics, but the Manics did it on a different level. They were the people that were bullied, whereas Oasis came along and they were the bullies. Yeah. And it was interesting to see how the music press reacted at that time, and the journalists reacted by being terrified because they were just middle class white boys and they didn't know what to do with these lads from a council estate that just would actually go for it and say, you know, and you forget how refreshing that was. And it was a period in time, but it was, that model is not around anymore. Mm. When Noel Gallagher is saying there's no kids from council estates anymore that can be this successful, it's hard to actually believe that in 20 years that the music business has changed so much, the landscape has changed, that they managed to do that within 2 years. That would never happen these days. And that's kind of an important message in it, that it's changed so massively.
And it's not only the fact that, you know, they kind of achieved that success in 2 years, but I guess the fact that, you know, we didn't have the window into it as we do now. The closest equivalent that I could think of was sort of, you know, the first album from the Arctic Monkeys, which was seen by many people as being sort of, you know, a throwback album towards that sort of Definitely Maybe,
yeah,
you know, kind of punk indie almost, if you will. Mm. But of course, the thing is that the Arctic Monkeys were bootlegged to death online and, you know, was subject to that sort of hype machine that's going to surround any band like that now. The idea of piling into the back of a van and, you know, going to whatever it was, Glasgow they went to, yeah, and landed their record deal, then piling back into the van and sort of, you know, re-emerging with an album pretty much a couple of months later. Yeah, that just doesn't happen anymore.
And there's no risk takers like Alan McGee anymore, and there's no labels like Creation anymore, where you can be as, you know, inventive as you want and waste a load of money or spend a load of money on drugs. Like, there would be no Super Free Animals, there would be no My Bloody Valentine without stuff like Creation, without a record company like that. And I think that's it's a loss, but it's also just, it's a real moment in time documentary, because it all just disseminated so quickly. Like, the music press is nothing now. Mm-hmm. Like, the enemy is a free sheet and it's just full of listicles.
Yeah.
Whereas there used to be absolutely amazing writers. And if you didn't like the way Britpop was going with the whole nationalism, and it was disgusting, like, it descended into this whole pomp and disgraceful flag waving. There was people within the music press like Neil Kilkearney that were actually waving the flag against it, because you forget, at the height of those Oasis, like, Nebworth gigs, DJ Shadow was released and introducing, and Neil Kilkearney was the man that was rallying against all that white-faced guitar music. And that should be a documentary in itself, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would jump in there, though, and say that, you know, while it did turn into sort of, you know, flag-waving Britpop, it was also the antithesis of the sort of middle-class Tory flag-waving of sort of the previous 15, 16 years or something like that.
In what way, though? Because, like, I think it got pretty conservative because it was revisionism. It was all like the Beatles and the Stones, and it wasn't,
yeah.
I mean, Suede were inventive with their, like, you know, revisionism, because they were Bowie and they were talking about having sex in the back of cars and stuff, and, you know, talking about gay sex in the back of cars, which was just unheard of at that time, which was so weird, and being on the chart show doing it and slapping their asses with, like, mic stands, but, like, my chords, not night stands, would be really hard. But I think with Oasis, it got to the stage where, even though I loved them at the beginning, it got to the stage where music was being taken like football. It was being rated like football teams and football scores. And that was disappointing. And that's the way that Britpop went. And there was nary a woman or a non-white face to be found in it as well.
Yeah, as you say, it was amazing, the kind of meteoric rise. I mean, this is such a short time period.
Yeah.
Like, I remember just kind of getting into music around 2000, 2001, and already it seemed like Oasis had been around forever, and they were still, like, in their 20s. Well, Noel was in his early to mid-30s. They just seemed like the kind of veterans of the scene, but then it fizzled out so quickly, and I know we talk about this film being, you know, very self-aggrandizing. Obviously, they've been executive producers, so you're not really going to get a lot of stuff. But actually, what works is the brothers have this weird thing where, within the same sentence, they will say, "We're the greatest band in the world until we wrote all those terrible songs for 5 years." Like, they're actually very good at undercutting They're like there's one kind of clip, and actually this film is great because they had way more footage than I assumed they would. Like,
I was surprised
how on the ball were they?
Very
early on, they were filming pretty much everything. But there's a great scene where there's an arm wrestle between the two of them. I think Noel wins, and Liam just goes, "Yeah, but it's actually what's inside the tin of beans that counts." Yeah. And he just completely, rather than go into like a mental strop, he just becomes really surreal.
I
and
don't
funny.
Know
and
if like, this is a great documentary, and I think the problem
it's not
with,
a great documentary,
as Jen alluded to. I believe. Azif Kapita was involved, who made Senna and Amy.
Yeah, he was another executive.
It's the same
producer.
Style where you don't see them, like their talking heads are audio. You don't see them, like there's not a camera in front of them like that recent De Palma movie, which is great, by the way. And I think Senna gets a lot of praise, and rightly so for some reasons, but also it's a tribute. I think it's less a documentary, more of a tribute. I think this is less of a documentary, more of a tribute. I think Amy's more of a documentary than a tribute. I think it's both. By the end of this, my patience had run out. In as much as I was like, because I mean, you were saying you'd like to hang out with them in a pub. That's my idea of fucking hell.
Hilarious.
No, man, I'd be gone. I could not hang out with these people.
Why?
Because it's too much. Because they're all like, you know, like they're too. It's too boorish. It's too laddish. It's too like, you know. I found myself going, if I was stuck on tour with this band, I'd be out of this band.
But you noticed that with they've all fell like flies. Like that was halfway through where everyone's like, well then they left. And like the Scott McLeod guy that just like he's in the video for Wonderwall and he was only on like two nights. He was like, I miss me bird. And they were like, how horrible are we? It's like, look at yourself.
I'd be right there with him. I'd be gone.
Yeah, but even then, like I mean, the band, at least in retrospect now, they are talking about people leaving the band and just going,
These are horrible.
I can see why.
And also, by all accounts, Noel Gallagher is like a really sweet, intelligent guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, some of the best stuff is kind of around their parents, I think. Certainly
Peggy
the mother seems
amazing.
Like an
She's
absolute
brilliant.
Saint.
She's absolutely brilliant.
And when she talks about Noel being the shy, kind of introverted guy and who's more of the dreamer, you get glimpses of that kind of stuff. And then the stuff around how dreadful their father was, you suddenly realise why Liam put on such a big front, I guess.
Sure.
So there's moments where you kind of get some story. But for the most part, it's just kind of, champagne supernova all the way.
Can we talk about Liam wearing what appears to be a straitjacket to Nebworth?
Oh, no, I think it's
his
like
walk.
Giant shirt.
It's just a weird safari thing that looks like something that, you know, his mom or Rod Stewart would have worn in
it's
the 70s,
Tom
and his
Cruise
hair is
worn
terrible.
In Interview with the Vampire, like it's amazing. And I was like, and also, like, okay,
he's got the best walk of all time.
Does
I
he
love
though?
That walk?
Oh,
it's
so
hilarious.
Good.
What about his
great.
Hair?
Because
the
change
hair.
Is quite.
He was like a matinee idol.
Did you fancy
idol.
Him?
Yes.
Do you
in
fancy
those
him?
Early days, he really was. He was absolutely stunning looking, and there's nothing you can like. There's no way around that. And I think in the Sylvia Patterson book, I'm Not With the Band, which is essential read, and she goes on about how she used to have a shine to Liam Gallagher, and I almost did the same as well, because for years like the guys that I like were like, you know, you're Richie Manic and very sensitive, but then I mean when Liam came along I was like, God, you know what, you can't deny that's a good looking guy, but also insane guy. And I think, you know, he doesn't get a lot of credit for the absolute genius of his interviews. I mean, that's the problem with Oasis now. The Gallagher brothers, they're great at interviews and they're colourful and they're hilarious in interviews, but that colourful and hilarity doesn't translate to the music. The music is leaden. It's like,
this is the thing,
you know, daddy's sauce, like, not a euphemism
for how sharp and like on the ball Noel is with like a kind of turn of phrase. It's never been in any of his songs. It's just dreadful.
Any of the songs, would you argue that any of them have
the importance of being idle was maybe his one.
Shaker Maker is outstanding, and I love Shaker Maker because it's entirely lazy. There is no effort in that song whatsoever, and Liam's vocals sound like a mix between like the Smash robot and Bowie, weirdly enough. It's that nasal tone that sounds like it's coming from miles away and he's right off his head, and it's just euphoric in its simplicity. Love it.
I think that those first two records are undeniably quality in terms of the songwriting.
I mean, they had a lot of great songs, just terrible lyrics.
without a doubt, but like part of it as well, when you saw some of the live concert footage, and I mean shit, I've been to enough fucking rock gigs in the past few years, when you saw some of the concert footage there, you were just like, are the crap lyrics part of the reason why 100,000 people can pack into a field and scream this back at the top of their voices.
They're like drunken lullabies or something.
And if there's a little more emotional engagement.
The audience, is that what you're saying? Because it's a predominantly working class audience that they can't connect with any music that's actually surreal.
No, not at all. But that if you connect to music like that, then you can't bellow it at the top of your lungs in a field with 990,000 other people.
I think they have a visceral connection. That's different. Like, that's different from saying that, you know, oh, it's because their lyrics are trite that people connect with them. I think it's because it struck a chord. Something like Rock and Roll Star really did strike a chord with a lot of working class people at the time, and I think that's
really
valid.
Sure, and I
think
cigarettes and alcohol is another perfect example of that.
But I think, you know, it's like football chanting or something. It's about, you know, common ground. And like the Stone Roses had that as well. Yeah. Like, and I think, you know, it's not a case of slagging off the audience more than saying when.
Not at all, but it's the same reason why, like, you don't find football chants that are sort of like, you know, Shakespearean sonnets adopted to rhythm.
I think your point
would
be that
simple nursery rhymes.
Noel Gallagher is such an amazing kind of like melody writer or knicker occasionally, but he's just so devoted to getting that kind of idea of his melodies out that he's not going to ruin how they scan with kind of fitting in lyrics. They're just literally like, the lyrics aren't really important.
They kept it simple. It's why Picture This sold at the Olympia 3 fucking nights in a row, because it's kept simple, and like, you know, that works for people who listen to the radio, I suppose. But I guess with Oasis, I mean, did you see them at the height of their fame?
I saw them 95, 96, 97.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, to even kind of expand on what you were saying earlier on, is it even that the gig and that kind of era and that kind of time and that kind of feeling isn't the same anymore?
Or it's not. Like, even when you look at that footage in the documentary of The Point, it looks chaotic. And
it
was chaotic. Yeah. I remember every time they used to play Bring It On Down, the place would go crazy and people would be stampeded on. And it was like those, when I can only imagine, it was like when people harken back to say what the Sex Pistols gigs were like or anything like that. It had this tension and violence that you don't find now, in because people don't care anymore, because music is just like a commodity now, and it's just like, you know, it's not life, and I don't think it's in young people's lives the way it was. And I hate sounding like an old person there, but like I don't feel
that's fair.
Everything's gone to the wall. Like, they don't care enough. Like, you know, if you look, as I say, like the music press, if you look at something like The Enemy, it's actually disgraceful that it's just gone to this terrible free sheet that, you know, has no context or no emotion to it.
No phones as well, no social media. You know, you have to actually live in the moment. Okay, so I guess to kind of wrap it up, a quick general question for Oasis. Important band, I think we can agree.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
good band? In terms of, like, you know, on the music, on the quality, on the releases.
Yeah, I think they've maybe 20 songs that are just pretty undeniably special, even if they're kind of, you know, Trogs-esque, kind of just nicking old riffs. But they had a magic. They
first
certainly had
Trogs reference on the show ever.
And what's more, it should be said that in terms of making them look like an excellent band, this documentary probably does a good job by cutting in 96.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
At one point, I was like, I didn't know that I was going to. Granted, they start with Nebworth, and I was like, okay, we're going to get there. But I wasn't sure if they were going to go beyond that. And then at one point, I was like, I was only about 10 minutes left. Okay, they're not going to bother with any of the info.
It's just forget Be Here Now exists.
So that's the documentary. It's Supersonic by Oasis. It's out of cinemas now, I think, perhaps.
I think it was a very limited release. Yeah, I'm sure the DVD thing will happen.
We all went to the cinema.
We had a lovely evening out. Should have talked about that in the preamble.
There's no time.
We're out of time. Okay, well, Jen, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Very much appreciated. Round of applause.
Thanks.
Our awful round of applause. Thank you guys as well.
Cheers.
Round of applause for either of you.
Okay.
Fuck off. Small round of applause.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so my name is Dave Hanrady. This has been No Encore, You Know the Drill. To play us out this week, a band called That Snake, with two A's in the name, so I'm not even going to bother trying to do the thing. They describe themselves as a recessionary degenerate rock combo, much like the Gallagher brothers, perhaps, from County Mayo, where Mother Gallagher is from. Mother Gallagher, I understand, like a fucking cult leader.
Do you know her really well?
They play erratic, noisy, slacker post-punk session music and hate your freedom. They enjoy playing in dive bars, squats, and derelict buildings. A new EP is out called In the Court of the Baby King. It's a compilation of their first two. So let's have a track from that. This is called Go Bricker. My name is Dave Hanrady. I've already done the outro. See you next week. Yeah, you're like, go Bricker, through you going to be late. The rooms of the split a full.
HPN, the Headstuff Podcast Network. See headstuff.org for more details.